Musical comedies come and go, but there's one that holds a special place in the affections of our musical comedy audience. Perhaps it was the personality of the artist who first performed it in this country in 1910. Blanche Brown, Bertie Wright, Claude Bantock, Leslie Holland, not forgetting the idol of Australian theatre-goers, Andrew Higginson. Then, those two popular inseparables who revived it here in 1933, Madge Elliott and Cyril Richard, or perhaps its melodies, some of the catchiest ever heard in musical comedy. But our audience is getting restless, so overture, please, to Lionel Monckton and Ivan Carroll's captivating Our Miss Gibbs. When the curtain goes up on Act One, we see the vestibule and general entrance to London's leading emporium, Garrod's. Lady customers lavishly gowned are busily shopping, and the scene is one of colour and bustling activity, most of which revolves around that very famous sales assistant, our Miss Gibbs. Mary Gibbs has a large personal following at Garrod's, but the man who follows her most ardently is young Lord Ainsford. He is looking for her now. And, a thing you don't often see, he stands up in the middle of the bargain counter and bursts into a song of love about this Yorkshire lass.
There's a girl at the stalls called Mary. She's dainty and rather demure. I come every day, I can't keep away. There's nobody like her, I'm sure. She hasn't long been in London. She's simple and yet she's smart. And though in Debrett her name isn't met, there's no other name in my heart. She's just a lass from Yorkshire, a little country maiden, with eyes of blue that all day through are laughter laden. Until the day I met her, my heart was fancy free. But oh, my little Yorkshire lassie, you are the girl for me. Whenever I speak to Mary, although she is humble and poor, her voice seems to bring a breath of the spring away from the edge of the moor. Her smile is a ray of sunshine, and no one can quite understand how dearly I prize one glance from her eyes or the touch of her dear little hand. She's just a lass from Yorkshire, a simple country maiden, with eyes of blue that all day through are laughter laden. Until the day I met her, my heart was fancy free. But oh, my little Yorkshire lassie, you are the girl for me.
Normally, the singing of a song would have a rather unnerving effect on the customers, but the conventions of musical comedy are nothing if not elastic. And caught up in the spirit of the thing, Madame Jeannie, the Scotch lassie from the Rue de la Paix, who is showing the latest creations to the bridesmaids of Lady Betty Thanet, incidentally the fiancée of Lord Ainsford, decides to do her selling to music, and the audience is now treated to her lively dissertation on hats.
Dresses, fancy that. But what are dresses without a hat? If you would set men talking when you're walking out to shop, you'll be all right if you're right on top. A busby made of fur is sure to cause a stir, and here is one we've got. You'll find it very hot. You have to push it down to there. It doesn't matter then if you have no hair. That's the lost Parisian hat, so buy it and try it. Keep your head up, stay near straight, if you have that hat. Women say you look like a cat, their chatter will better. They are waiting to see who on earth you can be. Men are waiting outside on the net.
Neither Lady Betty nor her fiancé, Lord Ainsford, is enthusiastic about the match. It was arranged by Betty's mother, the Duchess of Minster, and my lord's father, the Earl of St. Ives, presumably with the connivance of the Archbishop of Canterbury. It is all very aristocratic, and the programme reads like a page out of Burke's Peerage. It was not until the 1940s that Love on the Dole became fashionable. However, Lady Betty is in love with the Honourable Huey Pierpont, an amateur criminal, and it is her turn now to sing of romance.
Oh, I am not so unwilling, someone rather nice to wed, yet it is.
Whisper runs around the house. For now, this is the entrance of the star herself, our Miss Gibbs. Mary has been transferred to the flower department, and it is only fitting that she should make her entrance waving a bunch of heather. They call her Pretty Mary, she sighs, but her name is really Miss Gibbs.
I'm a little Yorkshire lass up in town at present. And I fancy in my glass I look most unpleasant. But it bothers me to see silly people waiting, saying they're in love with me. I'm so fascinating when I'm nothing of the sort.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm nothing of the sort.
Yes, you are.
People call me Pretty Mary. I don't believe them, for they often tell me things. Mary is a girl and not a fairy. I wish they wouldn't call me Mary when my name is Miss. But I really cannot see any cause whatever, for you're always calling me wonderfully clever when I'm nothing of the sort.
But you are.
No, I'm nothing of the sort.
Yes, you are.
Mary, people call me Clever Mary. I don't believe. For they often tell me
things.
Mary isn't wise, but she is wary. I'm just a canny girl from Yorkshire, and my name's Miss Gibbs.
Mary, we admire you, clever Mary. So do believe us. For we never tell you fibs. Mary, you are wise as you are wary. You are the smartest girl in London. For your name's Miss Gibbs.
Miss Gibbs, if you please.
Let us call you Mary dear.
Turning to the story of our Miss Gibbs, here's that irrepressible, the Honorable Huey Pierpong again. To further his career in crime, Huey makes an attempt, unsuccessful, to steal Mary's brooch, and then tries to steal her heart, still unsuccessfully. But it's only half-hearted burglary, for Huey really loves Lady Betty, and Mary, Lord Ainsford. Just the same, it's an excellent excuse for a little light-hearted song and dance.
You're all that I deal. I must admit to that my heart you almost could steal. I hope you won't consider I'm not over polite. You're pretty near the sort of man I want, but not quite. If you were just the sort of fellow I could admire, if you were just the model man a girl could desire, then we could have a giddy time at Hilton and Ball. But as it is, you're not that sort of person at all.
I were just a sort of girl, don't she could admire.
gentleman of girl good desire. Then we would have a giddy time at theater and a ball.
But as it is, you're not that sort of person at all.
I realize my love for you was all but inspired. I've seen a diamond bracelet that I almost acquired. And if I saw you in the church arrayed all in white, I'd pretty nearly mumble out, I will, but quite. If you were just the sort of girl that I could adore, if you had only got the modest million or more, then I, next Saturday upon your father would call. But as it is, I don't intend to do so at all.
If I were just the sort of girl that he could adore, if I had only got a modest million or more, then he, next Saturday upon my father would call.
But as it is, I don't intend to do so.
By various means, all the characters plan to be present that night at the White City, scene of the Franco-British exhibition. Mary, Lord Ainsford, Mary's cousin, Tim Gibbs, Lady Betty, and her amateur crook, Huey. But Betty's mother, the Duchess, threatens to spoil all the fun. A woman of great strength of character. She locks up her child in the bathroom and hides her clothes. And what does Betty do? Hangs out the window and screams, "Fire!" Which brings a fireman with a ladder smartly to the rescue. And next thing, Betty shows up at the White City in a schoolgirl's uniform. With what a tale to tell about the thrill of being rescued in the arms of a big, strong fireman.
I am sure your education is not complete at present, girls, till you've met with one sensation that's really rather pleasant, girls. A man who's young and handsome to grasp you tightly, yet most politely. For you feel a sort of misty charm when you're encircled by a manly arm. It's rather nice.
Take my advice and try it once or twice.
Arms and the man, arms and the man.
The stage is now set for a lover's quarrel between Mary and Lord Ainsford. Up to the present time, the lovesick peer has concealed his identity from Mary and tells her that he is a bank clerk. But it's hard to keep a secret in a musical comedy. And when Mary learns the truth that her boyfriend is the son and heir of the Earl of St. Ives and rich as Croesus, she tells him that she never wants to see him again. which is rather eccentric of her, but possibly she's been reading the works of Karl Marx. So she consoles herself with the company of her cousin Tim and memories of that little farm of theirs in Yorkshire.
I'd like to tell you all about the farm we call our home. It's nice to have a home, you must confess.
The aspect's simply perfect and the soil's a lovely loam. It measures half an acre, more or less.
Then we thought a little paddock quite conveniently near. Though, of course, that paddock isn't very wide.
When the donkey rubs his nose against the railing over here, well, his tail is swishing round the other side.
It's a nice little farm, and you won't do any harm if you come along and look at it one day.
And I'm open to a bet, if next summer isn't wet, we shall gather quite a basket full of hay.
Though the place isn't big, we've a piggy wiggy wee, and a garden with a lot of pretty flowers.
And we've got a giddy goose, who is always on the loose.
Oh, you love a little farm like us. We've started in a quiet way, a little poultry run. Our birds are really strong upon the leg.
And on Tuesday in the summertime, we have a lot of fun in hunting round the farm to find the egg.
Then we bought a champion rooster, guaranteed to make a noise, just to wake us in the mornings now and then.
But he proved a disappointment, for he thought he'd lost his voice, till we found he was a Cochin China hen. Oh, chop its head off.
It's a nice little farm, and you won't do any harm if you come and have a tumble in the hay.
We've a cow you would applaud, and we always call her Maud, cause she comes into the garden every day.
We've a spade and a hoe, and some turnips in a row, which are doing very nicely in the show.
And we now intend to keep just a half a brace of sheep.
Oh, you dumper in the farm like us.
Every great power, it seems, is represented at the exhibition, and in honor of the ambassadors, the Earl of St. Ives stages a spectacular moon fete. All that remains now is for Mary and Ainsford to kiss and make up, which is done with the assistance of the Earl, a good fairy if ever there was one. Believing that his son is quite serious about little Miss Gibbs, he gives the young couple his blessing. That leaves Lady Betty free to marry the Honorable Hughie. But Mary, not very much time to change into her fetching Pierrette costume for the finale, and moonstruck.
Close a sleepy eye when the moon
to wink. That isn't right, you know. Every day I'll be as good as gold, doing everything that I am told. But as soon as the sun's in bed, well, it's then I'm such a flighty little, foolish little head. I'm such a silly when the moon comes out. I hardly seem to know what I'm about. Skipping, hopping, never, never stopping. I can't keep still, although I try. I'm all the quiver when the moon beams glass. That is the moment when I long to dance. I can never close my sleepy eye when the moon comes creeping up the sky.
I'm such a silly when the moon comes out. I hardly seem to know what I'm about. Skipping, hopping, never, never stopping. I can't keep still until I cry.
Well, that ends well, and Mary and her sprig of nobility decide they are suitable for the marriage stakes, and that puts everybody in a happy frame of mind for the musical finale, which is the inevitable ending to Our Miss Gibbs and all romantic musical comedies.
We have only prayed to Mary, so do believe us, for we never tell you things.
And so the show is over. Here and there, some devotees, hemmed by the crowd streaming out to the foyer, whistle soft fragments of the captivating Lionel Monckton melodies. And so, happily home they go from the musical comedy theater.